Welcome to the show. My name is Lizzie Barron, and this past November, I attended the Parkland Institute's fall conference entitled Doing Democracy Better, Challenging the Politics of Fear and Resentment, in order to share some of the talks with our Terran Forma listeners. The Parkland Institute is a research center within the University of Alberta's Faculty of Arts, and via their About page, the Parkland Institute studies, quote, economic, social, cultural and political issues facing Albertans and Canadians using the perspective of political economy, end quote. Such research generally connects to the following three themes: strengthening Alberta's democracy, envisioning Alberta's economic future, and investing in public services and strong communities. The November conference certainly grappled with such themes, with a particular emphasis on strengthening and building an inclusive democracy here in Alberta and beyond, despite multiple interacting crises such as the COVID-19 pandemic, far-right populism worldwide, and the climate crisis. This week, and over the course of upcoming episodes, I will be bringing you a condensed version of a talk and/or panel from the event. For further listening and viewing, I would absolutely recommend checking out the Parkland Institute's YouTube channel. The link is in the show notes of this episode. Today's episode features a talk given by Parkland Institute Research Manager Ian Hussey on November 20th, 2022, entitled Job Creation or Job Loss? Big Companies Use Tax Cut to Automate Away Jobs in the Oil Sands. From coast to coast to coast, you're listening to Terra Informa.
You're listening.
Before we begin, we would like to acknowledge that this episode was recorded in Treaty 6 territory, in Amiskwitsi, Wisconsin, Beaver Hills House, or so-called Edmonton. We are broadcasting from unrecognized Papa's Chase Cree territory. The Papa's Chase Cree were displaced following consistent efforts from local officials like Frank Oliver to discredit the legitimacy of their treaty right to this territory and to Reserve Number 136, now South Edmonton. This show was produced in Treaty 7 territory, the traditional territories of the Nitsipi from the Blackfoot Confederacy, including the Siksika, Piikani, and Kainai Nations, the Ira Nakota of the Chiniki, Bearspaw, and Wesley Nations, and the Dene of the Tsuut'ina Nation. Southern Alberta is also home to the Métis Nation of Alberta Region 3. At the confluence of the Bow and Elbow Rivers, this site was called Mokinsis by the Blackfoot and is more recently called the City of Calgary. Not confined to history, these regions are also the present homelands of many First Peoples who build their lives here, pursue livelihoods, and gather together, including Cree, Métis, Blackfoot, and Dene. Wherever you're listening from, we ask you to consider whose version of history informs your understanding of the land you're on. A quick disclaimer before we begin. This audio was taped using a field recorder in a lecture theater, so the audio quality is not ideal, so we apologize for that. We hope you enjoy the talk nonetheless. Without further ado, here is Ian Hussey at the Parkland Institute's 2022 Fall Conference.
Ian Hussey began his work as a research manager at the University of Alberta's Parkland Institute in 2014, and he earned a career appointment in 2019. He's a steering committee member of the Corporate Mapping Project, a seven-year initiative supported by the Social Science and Humanities Research Council of Canada, and focused on the oil, gas, and coal industries in Western Canada.
Thanks, Jerry. So my name is Ian. I work at the Parkland Institute. I mostly work on things to do with fossil fuels or climate policy, but I also write on minimum wage. For the last number of years, I've done work on the largest oil companies in Alberta, and that's what I'm going to start talking about today. We just published a report by the same name, Job Creation or Job Loss, Big Companies Use Tax Cuts to Automate Away Jobs in the Oil Industry. So I'm going to talk a bit about the corporate tax giveaway, Then I'll talk a bit about automation, and I'm going to end my presentation talking about the Alberta Federation of Labor recently published a report on creating new jobs in the energy industry as Alberta and Canada and the world progress in the energy transition. So I'm going to talk about the AFL's job creation strategy for the energy industry at the end. So I'm sure everyone's aware, United Conservative Party gave a lot of money to large profitable corporations. What you might not be aware, because our 2019 election was a lot of bluster about the carbon tax and, you know, the federal government sucks and that sort of angry populist rhetoric. But in fact, the corporate tax giveaway, the corporate tax cut, was the top priority of the United Conservative Party in their platform and in their election campaign in 2019. And they phrased it as the backbone of their, quote, job creation plan. So they sold this as a way to create jobs and boost the economy. What you may be aware of now is that's not actually what happened. And one of the things we did in our report is my buddy Tony Clark did a couple Freedom of Information requests to the government of Alberta that he shared with me, and those were to do with the corporate tax cut. And one of the pieces of information that we got from Tony's Freedom of Information request was a briefing document that economists in the Alberta Treasury Branch of Finance in the government of Alberta did in advance of the UCP taking power. So it's a common thing in an election period, staff of the government, in this case a bunch of economists, they did research thinking like, okay, the UCP, they're leading in the polls, they may become the next government, therefore they will be our bosses as civil servants. We're going to do research on their policy platform, including a corporate tax cut. And the advice that the Alberta Treasury Branch gave to the incoming government when the UCP formed government was actually their claims in their platform were not based in historical fact. They were not really based in economic theory, and it probably wasn't going to work out the way that they claimed in their election platform. UCP ignored that advice. And they not only instituted the corporate tax cut, they actually sped it up by more than twice as fast. They used the COVID pandemic as an excuse to accelerate giving billions of dollars to the largest corporations in our province. This, of course, it costs a lot of money. And part of the point that we make in our report is that money could have actually gone to public services. So I'll talk about that a bit more later in my presentation. Right. As you can see, I've discovered PowerPoint's designer function. I've got all these great designs on my slides. Was not aware of that in previous years. So, you know, one of the things I've been doing for Parkland for a number of years now is I've been researching the largest oil companies in Alberta. They also happen to be the largest industrial corporations in our province. This led me to coin the term the Big Five oil sands companies. Those are Suncor, CNRL, Cenovus, Imperial Oil, and Husky Energy. You may be aware that Cenovus actually merged with Husky about a year ago, and so now we're talking about the Big Four corporations. These four companies operate 86% of oil sands production in our province. And that is about 3.5 million barrels of oil a day. Some information about corporate taxes or not. In Alberta, that's a real question of whether we get corporate tax revenue or we don't. So these companies, in their annual reports, they spend a lot of time reading financial reports, which is a pretty nerdy thing to do, but I actually get a kick out of it. These companies actually say in their annual reports, these are not my own calculations, they state this explicitly, that as four companies, they calculate that they saved $4.5 billion over the four-year UCP term from this tax cut. And you may have heard this before. This is not not the only one who's done it this fact. You know, I believe probably the Alberta NDP has, the environmental movement has. But one of the things that I did in my report that is adding information to the world is that's only like really part of the story. Because the way the corporate taxes work is if a company loses money in any given year, they can take that loss and actually reduce their taxes going forward into the future, or they can actually use it to reduce their taxes they paid in previous years. So it isn't just about getting a tax handout. If they have a big loss, such as like when the oil prices crashed in 2014, or you know the COVID pandemic happens, it's actually beneficial for them to lose even more money in 2020, because they get an even larger loss on their books for 2020, and they can use that to reduce their taxes going forward or going back. If they have profitable years, the last couple years of the NDP government, 2018 and 17, these companies actually made a lot of money. So they can reduce the taxes they had paid in those years. And so that's what I'm saying here. The Big Five all received a net income tax recovery. That means they actually got money from the income tax system. So they got more money back from the tax system than they paid in. That's called a net income tax recovery. So in 2019, as a group, these five companies got $2.6 billion owed to the tax system in excess of what they paid in. So they're making money off of taxes. In 2020, because of the large losses to do with the pandemic, they actually received $6.6 billion in 1 year through the tax system. So, you know, they start making money in 2021. The average price of West Texas Intermediate, which is the North American benchmark for oil, WTI, was trading at about $68 a barrel, which is a pretty good price. And these companies had net income taxes expenses of $5.2 billion. That means they paid $5.2 billion into the tax system in excess of what they might have recovered through the tax system. So over the first 3 years of the UCP government, these companies actually received $4 billion more than they paid in taxes. They literally didn't pay any taxes. And in fact, made $4 billion off the tax system. As you can imagine, you know, I don't think anyone in this room received that benefit through the tax system. Or, you know, unlikely. So, you know, we have this great communications coordinator at Parkland, Rita Braga, and she was able to take, with our designer, Flavio Rojas, able to take some of the research that I produced for my report. And so we produced some infographics for social media. This is one of them saying like, hey, you know, these companies, they got a $4.3 billion tax giveaway. You know, what did they do? After the tax giveaway, they cut almost 3,500 jobs. And they cut that mostly through automation and through the merger of Husky and Synovus. This is a longer point of view from the 2014 global oil price crash, is where we start. Because 2014, when oil prices had been high from 2004 to 2014, there was a lot of construction in the oil industry, there was a lot of employment. So 2014 was actually the peak of the employment in oil and gas in Canada and in Alberta. So that's why we start there. And as you can see, over the last 7 or 8 years, the Alberta industry has lost about 26,000 jobs. And in Canada, the national number is about 41,000. And you can see the jobs are not really coming back, and that's why we talk about automation, because the jobs are largely not coming back, because these companies are accelerating automation. Automation in the oil and gas industry in Canada and in Alberta specifically has actually been going on for about a decade, a little bit more than a decade, and it was increased, it was sped up in 2014, you have a global oil price crash. Companies ended up sacking in 2015 and 16 a lot of their staff, a lot of their technical, very experienced, very skilled workers. And many of those jobs didn't come back after these people were fired in 2015 and 16. And then with COVID in 2020, these companies, particularly the leading four companies, used COVID as an excuse to accelerate automation even more, particularly remote technologies. And this could be anything from being able to pay attention to the details of their facilities, using a lot of sensors that generate data, and then that data is then analyzed by advanced computing systems or artificial intelligence, as not necessarily like a human person looking at the data. Or, you know, the more obvious example we kind of know about in Alberta is driverless haul trucks. Trucks driven by robots, not by human drivers. So there's hundreds of truck drivers who've lost their jobs. And, you know, companies do this, you might imagine, they're able to produce more oil or more gas, cut their costs, and they're able to therefore pay executives and shareholders more money. And the way that they're cutting their costs is they're cutting jobs, obviously, but they're also increasing the efficiency of their operations through advanced computing systems. And the big four oil companies are working with technology companies that you have heard of. AWS, Amazon Web Service, most of AWS's revenue is actually from technology. It's not from mailing you, you know, books in the mail or whatever. And Microsoft. Microsoft has a long-term contract with Suncor Energy to increase digitalization of their company. This is just a quick shout out to the complete collapse of capital spending in the oil and gas industry by the major oil companies, these four companies. So you start in 2014 again, this was the peak of capital spending as well as jobs. At the time, five companies were spending about $31 billion in 1 year on capital spending. That could be to build bitumen mines, it could be to build in situ production, which is a different type of production than mining. And then, you know, real crash because of the price of oil in 15-16. There's a bit of uptick in 17 and 18, and that's largely because CNRL and Suncor were building their final mines. Might be the last mines of the oil industry, and that work was completed at the end of 2018. And that's why, even in 2019, before COVID happened, you see a real drop in capital spending, because they're not spending billions of dollars building a bitumen mine. One thing I will mention that I don't think is in my slides is the Alberta Energy Regulator actually forecasts forward through 2020, you know, is the capital spending coming back? The answer is no. In the oil sands, the expectation is capital spending isn't going to be half of what it was, you know, in the 2010s. And in crude oil and natural gas, we're looking at about two-thirds of the spending that we had experienced historically. And so the AER is not anticipating an influx of capital spending. So this is what I'm saying. You know, they cut jobs, they automate away jobs, and the executives, the top paid executives of these four companies, received a raise in 2021 on average of about $2.35 million. The average compensation of these four gentlemen is like $10 to $12 billion a year. Interesting fact, not on my slides, in 2020, three of these four executives received increased compensation in 2020. You think about how many people lost their jobs, the fact that we're all struggling to pay our bills. Well, three of the four of them received increased compensation because of the value of their stock. They own stock in their companies, and therefore, when that was paid to them on an annual basis, it had a certain value that was an increase in compensation for them. If you've been around Alberta for a while, you may have heard of the old campaign of the Alberta Could campaign. Hey, if the Alberta government had more money, it could do X, Y, Z. This is sort of the basis of this infographic, which is if Alberta had, you know, not given away $4.3 billion just to these four companies, and mind you, we're not talking about Shaw or TELUS or the pipeline companies, all of whom are billion-dollar companies as well, we're just talking about these four companies. If Alberta had kept that money, corporate tax revenue, we could have hired 10,000 employees in critical areas. I'm talking about nurses, teachers, educational assistants, people who work in long-term care facilities, you know, any number of other roles, emergency medical responders. But we didn't have that money. And we know our healthcare system and our education system is critically underfunded. We know that we need more staff, and therefore we need the public revenue to pay for that, right? I want to end on this note. The Alberta Federation of Labor, which is the provincial body, the largest labor advocacy organization in Alberta. Represents about 175,000 workers in the public and private sector. This could be healthcare workers, it could be workers that work in the energy industry. They recently published a really important study on the energy transition, how things are going, and how Alberta could actually lean into the energy transition and create, in fact, more jobs than we had historically in the energy industry. And that's really important, and I wanted to share it with you today. I'm happy to talk about this, because we need these propositional visions of, like, what could Alberta be, where Alberta's going to work. You know, many people are very concerned, particularly people who work in the energy industry, about their future. You know, I was recently at a conference, and I spoke to Karen Capri, who's Secretary-Treasurer of the Alberta Federation of Labor. And she was saying, yeah, you know, hey, I know a lot of people that work in energy, and they might have 10 years till retirement. They don't know, am I going to get those 10 years of employment till I can retire and, you know, have a good life with my family after I'm done being a worker. And so there's a lot of anxiety here. And so this is why it's so important the AFL has published this vision. And they're saying, you know, there's a lot of detail in the report, but I've sort of boiled it down to this one slide. That it is possible for us to create and sustain over 200,000 jobs in 2030 to 2050 with some important investments and some important rethinking about the energy industry and how do we diversify within the energy industry. And so I'll just run through this really quickly. I'm happy to talk about it further. I'm happy, you know, if you have a different vision of Alberta, happy to hear that too. The backbone of what they're saying is, listen, you know, right now most of our oil and gas is being shipped to the States and it's being shipped for combustion. It's used in power plants, it's used in vehicles, whatever. What they're saying is we can shift from producing fuel for combustion to producing feedstock for material production. And what that means is carbon fiber, asphalt binding, recyclable plastics, which is a petrochemical product, recyclable plastic. This, as well as the production of hydrogen, if it's blue hydrogen, it's produced from natural gas using carbon capture. It's going to require carbon capture utilization and storage. That's a complex topic. And the important thing that the AFL is putting forward is, of course, the future of the energy industry and the future of our economy is electrification. That means that in Canada and Alberta, we actually need to produce three times the amount of electricity we're producing right now. That's a really big deal. It's not going to be easy to do. It's going to require a bunch of money. It's going to require a bunch of skilled workers. But if we were to do that, it actually allows all kinds of other things to happen, which I don't have time to get into. But happy to take a question about that. Hydrogen is a hot topic. Right now, green hydrogen, which is clean fuel produced by renewable energy, it's costly. And it's costly because of a technology called an electrolyzer. I don't know if I pronounce it correctly, electrolyzer. It's hard to do in front of a room of people. Anyway, renewable energy, electrolyzer, green hydrogen. The electrolyzers are quite expensive. It's anticipated that the price for those are going to fall over the next decade. So the AFL, as well as organizations like the International Energy Agency, are talking about hydrogen, they're talking about carbon capture, and right now it's possible, given that we produce a bunch of natural gas, that we could have carbon capture with natural gas, get a blue hydrogen, which is still obviously based in fossil fuels, given it's based in natural gas. Sustainable aviation fuel is a new thing. There's a couple ways to produce this, but the most obvious one is you use like canola oil, biofuel, to mix with jet fuel. Suncor's already doing that. There's an indigenous group based in Treaty 7 around Calgary that has just proposed that they would like to produce biofuel to mix with jet fuel, sustainable aviation fuel, to sell that fuel to airlines flying out of the Calgary airport. So that's an indigenous business proposition. A big part of what the AFL is talking about, and this is really important, I don't want to take up too much time, I think I've been speaking for a while, is Alberta actually has a lot of potential for critical minerals and metals. This is like lithium and a bunch of other stuff that goes into electric vehicles and specifically batteries. And what the AFL is proposing is we shouldn't just like rip it and ship it kind of like we do with oil and gas. We should actually have a processing and manufacturing business in Alberta, like a midstream business where, yes, we would produce lithium and other critical minerals and metals, but we would actually process it here. We would have manufacturing jobs here. Of course, the AFL is proposing that those jobs would be unionized, so workers have the benefit of unionization. And this would lead into us supplying batteries, not only for energy storage, but also for electric vehicle charging stations or electric vehicles themselves. Obviously, a lot of those electric vehicles are going to be manufactured in Ontario. We don't have a lot of that manufacturing. And then they have a plan for net zero buildings, which again, I'm happy to speak about. But just wanted to run through that quickly, and it might have been too fast, but again, happy to have this discussion during the Q&A. So thank you.
That's all the time we have for this week. I have been your host, Lizzie Barron. Thank you for listening. Terra Informa is a production of CJSR 88.5 FM, and all our content is created by a team of volunteers. Thank you so much to the Parkland Institute for the Media Pass and for putting on the informative conference. And thank you so much to Ian Hussey for all the insights he shared that you just heard today. This episode was produced by me, Lizzie Barron. You can reach us for comments or questions via email at terra@cjsr.com or message us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Terra Informa. For previous episodes, check out our website, terrainforma.ca. Catch you next week, right here on Terra Informa.
Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. A new video game called High Water immerses players in a dystopian world ravaged by climate change-induced floods, war, and chaos. Igor Simic is CEO and creative director of Demagogue Studios, which created High Water. In the game, players help a teenager named Nico sneak onto a rocket ship the rich have built to flee to Mars.
Since wars are raging, people are dying of dysentery, etc. He wants to move to a better life.
To get there, Nikos must navigate the landscape by boat, collect his friends, and fight adversaries. Along the way, players face moral questions.
So, for example, you might decide not to help someone because there isn't enough space in your boat, or you might decide to help them.
The game is satirical at times, Simic says it's meant for entertainment, not to preach about climate change. But the creators were influenced by natural disasters, such as Hurricane Katrina and flooding in Serbia.
That triggered something, just the images of boat